Welcome back to A Daughter's Dilemma podcast, where we discuss relationships with mothers and daughters and everything in between, including their interaction with one another. I am Nephra, the mother.
And I am Rodnique, the daughter. And today we're going to be talking about what it means to be a Black woman, because it is Women's History Month. Mm-hmm. And women have kept it going since the beginning of time.
We've ran the world. What are you saying?
Literally. So okay. There's, I don't know why it took this long, you know, to get a month. I don't know how long it's been a month, but
I think we're just not observing it and realizing it. Yeah. One thing I do know about where we are right now in this country and in this age is that we are becoming more aware of our power. Mm-hmm. If this last election didn't tell you nothing, or the election before that, because that's when we had, you know, many women and women of color to actually hold positions like AOC.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. In our Congress. So, yeah, I think we're now realizing and recognizing Women's History Month. It's probably been Women's History Month for many, many, many years.
Probably.
But again, because women are undervalued in American society. We're going to talk about American society because we don't know nothing about them other countries, okay? I don't know about them. because we are undervalued in American society, it is just not widely, I don't know, I guess widely known.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if Women's Month was really, or Women's History Month was really so important, mm-hmm. why is it not celebrated and taught in schools? Did you learn it?
No.
I didn't learn about it until I was an adult. I didn't learn about it even in college.
Apparently, it became a thing in 1978 and started as Women's History Week.
Okay, just like Black History Month.
Yeah.
Just like Black History, you know, Black History Month started off as a week as well.
Mm-hmm. And they moved it once in 1978. That's when it started, and then in 1987 is when they moved it to a month, like a full month.
In 1987.
Yes.
So there's been a Women's History Month since 1987. Mm-hmm. And I believe I heard about Women's History Month in 2000, I want to say two or three. Mm-hmm. Because I thought it was pretty cool because my birthday's coming up. And I was like, oh, I was born on Women's Month. Yes, empowering the women. Thank you. You know, so, I think I heard, it was about 2001, well, it was probably about 2000. It was early part of my marriage, I remember that.
Okay.
Because I was having a conversation with my then husband at the time about it. And mm-hmm. So, I do vividly remember that. Women's History Month, particularly, I want to talk, though, today about Black women.
Of course.
Because we are Black women.
We are.
And you and I, to be honest, guys, and I know I talk about how great a relationship we have, and she always agrees that we have a great relationship, but we've never really sat down and talked about our individual experiences as Black women. We've always cultivated our relationship just maneuvering through life.
Yeah.
So I've never talked to you about your racial experiences. Mm-hmm. You don't know anything about my racial experiences. So I think this would be a good podcast that we talk about that.
Okay.
Okay. Now, first off, we're going to first give the mention because the OWN Network recently aired Invisible Portraits.
Yes.
And it is by a writer, a producer, and a director. And I do not want to mess up her name, but I believe her first name is OG.
Okay.
Because at the beginning of the credits, it said OG the Yogi. Mm-hmm. So I believe her first name is OG.
Gotcha.
And we're not going to even chop up the last name, okay? Mm-hmm. However, she's a filmmaker, and she has and I believe this is going to be a series on OWN called Invisible Portraits, and it gives a look at the plight or the life or the role of the Black woman in America.
Yeah.
And this very first episode was actually very, very enlightening.
It was.
I watched it like three times because I was like, this is absolutely amazing. Yeah. Okay. And I made you watch it because I'm like, look, we're going to talk about it on a podcast. So I'm going to need you to go watch it. So one of the things that I absolutely loved about this genuineness was it wasn't overpowering with the information, but it was definitely clear that the Black woman has always been underestimated.
Absolutely.
Underappreciated. Mm-hmm. And undervalued.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about kind of all of that. We're going to try to do this in an hour, okay? But I was just so excited. Like, it really, really intrigued me about what this Invisible Portress. I plan on keeping up with the episodes if she's going to do more. But, you know, I went to the website, OWN's website, Invisible Portraits, and I was OWN.com/Invisible Portraits. Make sure you put the N in parentheses so you can get the right one. But it looks like it was another episode coming out called It Takes a Village. Hasn't aired yet, wouldn't let me play it yet, things of that nature. But again, I think this is just going to be another OWN spotlight at that point, you know, and it may come out next week or like I said, I don't know.
Right.
But what is important is before we get into the Invisible Portraits, because we are going to talk about that, guys, we're going to talk about our racial experiences as being a Black woman in America, because I think that's going to set the stage for what Invisible Portraits talked about.
Okay. But before we talk about that, I want to know, have you watched Amand on Netflix?
No.
It is very good. You should watch it.
Okay.
It very much correlates to what we're talking about because it talks about the 14th Amendment and how it came to be.
Uh-huh.
That's the amendment that says that all persons born or naturalized in the United States mm-hmm. are citizens and we have equal rights. And
right.
All that.
Right.
It talks about the civil rights movement. It mm-hmm. talks about the women's rights movement. And
okay.
then it gets to like this one particular section mm-hmm. of the women's rights episode where then it hits on Black women and how we had our OWN, how we were a part of all both of these big struggles to get the rights that we were born into.
Yes.
But yet we still get pushed to the back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We still get pushed to the back. During civil rights, we still get pushed to the back during women's rights because not only do we have to deal with being women and in therefore in a man's eyes, Black or white man, inferior, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But also because of the color of our skin, Black, white men and women were also at the bottom of the pole there.
And that was actually... And if that's what's happening in the Amand mm-hmm. on Netflix, which I'm going to take a look now, you know, I'm on vacation, so I'm gonna be looking now. in Invisible Portraits, they pointed that out.
Yeah, they had a whole diagram.
Yes, I saw the whole that diagram. Dr. Joy DeGruy did, mm-hmm. which I absolutely love her. She's like my favorite person now.
I know, she's so cute.
She
I
was
love
so
her.
Cute. She's my favorite person.
I love
okay,
her.
So I'm gonna just I've been Googling her books, so I'm like I'm reading all of them. Okay, I'm doing all of them, you know, but. She was absolutely amazing in this and they all were amazing.
They were
real. They were genuine. Like even the young lady who actually, read the poem mm-hmm. throughout the series, her name was Jasmine Williams
okay.
and she just did an amazing job at that poem.
She did.
I mean, I felt her pain.
Yeah.
But I felt her love, too. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I was really, really, it's absolutely, like, Oprah, you don't disappoint. Okay, I'm just saying.
It's Oprah. What are
it's
you
Oprah. I mean, she's about genuineness and just being your authentic self.
Yeah.
And it came across in this filmmaker's.
About how it's important for Black girls to be their authentic self.
Yes.
Because we are truly amazing.
It literally inspired me.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh my God. And educated me
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Yeah.
Because we don't think about our OWN individual experiences as being of a collective.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was doing on yesterday was I was, you know, getting ready for my videos and I was really talking about, I was really trying to think of what I could do. Because, you know, that's my thing, promoting women, supporting women, especially my Black women.
Of course.
And one of the things that hit me, even after watching Invisible Portraits, is that a lot of times society will make us feel like what we're going through is exclusive to us. Mm-hmm. And it can make us feel alone.
Absolutely.
And that we don't have any support.
That you don't have any support, you don't have anybody who relates to you, that what's wrong with me, that I feel this way, that I feel bad about the situation that I'm going through. But in reality, you're supposed to feel bad about the situation you're going through because it's a bad situation. But you have, you know, I want to say the media and the world and social standards telling you, especially as a Black woman, well, you're just supposed to be strong. That's just the default. Black women are just supposed to be strong. Black women are the strongest of all of us. And that may be true, but that doesn't give an exception to that we should be treated like human beings.
Absolutely.
That we should be given love, that we should be given compassion, that we deserve love that doesn't require us to suffer first.
Because we have suffered first.
Yeah.
We have suffered first at the hands of definitely slavery and moving on up to today. But before we get into all of that, okay, because we're just getting all off the subject. I'm personally excited about it because I have these outlets. Mm-hmm. I think more so than anything, the podcast and then my videos. I think I have this outlet to voice my story.
Yeah.
And one of the things in Invisible Portraits, that's what they were saying. You got a voice.
Yeah.
Use your voice. And so that's what really inspired me. I'm like, I'm going to use my voice. You know, I'm going to tell my truth, which I have been doing anyway, right. You know, but on a different level.
Yeah.
Because they even said in, you know, in this particular one, I believe it was Dr. Ruha Benjamin in this film, is that if you don't tell your story, they will tell it for you. Mm-hmm. And it will not be
your actual story.
Your authentic story.
No.
And it may not even be your true story. Mm-hmm. But one that they want other people to know.
One that they want to fit the narrative.
Exactly. Of white supremacy.
Exactly.
Or control. It was absolutely powerful. Look, guys, I suggest you go on get on demand and get your lot.
Now, it's on demand. It's on demand, and you can also download the Watch Own app and watch it for free. You don't have to sign in or anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can also go to InvisiblePortraits.com and watch it as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I found it. Okay.
Just now.
That's how you think I'm getting all these names.
Got it.
Because, you know, they gave the names, and I'm like, I got to write all these names down because I was.
Right.
I watched it three times.
I was impressed. I was like, okay, look at you knowing names and stuff.
Yes. Okay. Be impressed. Okay. But ain't no shame in my game. I'm on the website. Okay. But,
Wow, Mom.
Sorry. Okay. I'm shutting the alarm off. But what's going to be important is we talk about our own story. So, you want to go first? I can go first about what we have experienced as far as any racial tension or racial injustices, maybe mm-hmm. discrimination, maybe prejudice that you have maybe encountered in your 25 years of being on this earth.
Well, I feel like my, like, racial experience comes more, like, you know, in the form of microaggressions.
Okay.
People pretending, you know, that they're, you know, on my side, but really they're attacking who I am.
Yep.
But I am very grateful that I have never experienced just outright blatant racism. Like, I've had friends. And it wasn't until I went to college that I really realized how racist the world was.
Okay.
But because up until then, I had always gone to schools where there was everybody. There was Black people, there was white people, there was Asian people, there were Hispanic people, there was everybody.
Yeah.
And that's how we hung out. Like, we hung out with everybody because that's just, like, we're all people. We just all hang out.
And as your mom, that was important to me.
Yeah, I knew that was important to
because you. You needed to know, your brother needed to know, you needed to know that everybody don't live like you.
Yeah.
And everybody's belief systems are not like yours.
Yeah.
And everybody's thinking is not like yours. And I believe it's getting you in those environments where there were other people mm-hmm. who not only look like you, but then there were other people who didn't look like you.
Yeah.
You would see the difference and learn to respect the difference.
Absolutely. And I definitely think that that's what happened. I knew that being in a diverse environment was really, really important for me growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But because I had always had that.
Yeah.
When I went to college, I started to experience racism. And like one thing that I will never forget is like we would go to parties.
Okay.
And we would go to frat parties. And where I was on campus, we were like right next to like Greektown. And
okay.
Like where all the frats are, all the sororities, everything.
Now listen up, guys. She's talking about Mizzou.
Yeah.
We're going to go and put them on out there.
University of Missouri, Columbia.
Absolutely. She's talking about Mizzou.
2014 to 2015.
And we're going to talk about it more, but keep going.
But yeah, we would go out. We, you know, we'd get all dressed up, get all cute, looking all fine, you know, just a group of fine black women, you know,
right.
Walking around trying to party, you know.
Right.
And we would literally, I remember there was one night, there was a group of five white girls, just basic white girls, real average, real. Nothing.
Absolutely. Real privileged.
Not right. Nothing
real Caucasity looking.
Them.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and they walked into this frat party. It was at this huge house. It was a beautiful house. And there were some guys standing in front of the door and they just let them walk in. Oh, hey, how you doing? We start to walk up to the door. We don't even get to the door. Right. Because they're okay. So there were two steps and then there was like a sidewalk and then there was like the porch and then there were more steps.
Okay.
We get up the first two steps and one of the guy comes and meets us at the front lawn. To tell them that they're not letting anybody else in.
Wow.
And so we're like, okay, whatever. I didn't make a big deal of it out of it. I really didn't want to go party anyway. But, you know, we didn't make a big deal out of it. We just went, all right, fine, move on to the next house. Literally right up behind us comes a group of maybe, again, four or five white people, men and women, walk right in, no problem. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, drinks are downstairs, just...
Wow.
Yeah. I remember there was this other instance where we actually got into one of those frat parties once.
Okay.
And everything was fine. We were all chilling, you know, having drinks, talking, dancing, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, and mind you now, like, when we're in this frat party, we're the only five black people there. So when I see... all four of my other black friends rallying together.
Right.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
Apparently, this one boy said to this girl, Brittany, who I was friends with, he said to her, "You are so pretty for a nigger." Like, said it to her face. It was nothing.
Wow.
Straight face. Dead ass.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so she starts screaming. She starts going off.
She's absolutely.
She's from Chicago.
Like, oh, my.
Right. So she starts screaming. She starts going off. She starts yelling. Like, it was a whole thing.
She from Chirac. Okay. And you
really tried.
You really tried.
You really tried.
Oh, wow. So what happened?
She was just very upset. And so eventually we had to leave. Like, we didn't, like, there was nothing else for us to do but to try to leave. And I don't think she ever reported it to anybody. I don't really think anybody there was to report it to.
Right.
There was another friend of mine. We lived in the same dorm and she was walking home one day at night and there was a group of white guys driving in a car past her and they were heckling her as they were passing her. They were calling her nigger. They were calling her porch monkey, just all types of things.
Oh, wow.
It was terrible. And she actually did report it to, I don't know, somebody at our dorm. One of the.
Well, I remember when you got enrolled, there was a diversity or multicultural team.
Mm-hmm.
To help with those things.
Right.
So is that what she reported it to? Or
I assume.
Okay.
I assume. As far as I know, nothing ever came of it, though.
Of course not.
Report was given. But that was the first time that I really, truly experienced, like, genuine racism.
Yeah.
Like, blatant racism in my life.
Yeah. How did it make you feel at the time? So you're going to have to take yourself back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What emotions were coming up for you? Like, not getting to the party? Like, what were you feeling? And not getting... And then that interaction with him calling her a nigger. Like, what was your emotion?
It was really... Because I was in a situation I didn't want to be in the first place.
Right.
I think that this just kind of added on top of it, and it just really made me feel just less than, you know? Mm. It made me feel less than. Like, you wouldn't walk it, like, you wouldn't say this type of shit to anybody off the street. Like, at least I wouldn't.
Right.
You know, I believe that no matter who you're talking to, no matter what color, race, age, whatever,
right,
you are going to talk, you're going to have a certain level of respect for them. And right. I felt like because I'm here, not that I didn't deserve that basic level of respect.
Oh, okay.
But because it kept happening, because there was like instance after instance after instance that I'm hearing about.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't feel like, I started to just not feel worthy of
wow
that basic level of respect. Like, I just started to feel like we're just second class citizens, and that's just what it is.
Right. And so as a Black woman, what do you do with that?
You try not to get angry.
You try not to get angry.
You try not to get angry.
And not fall into the...
stereotype of the angry Black woman. But at the same time, how do you expect me not to be angry when I can't get the basic level of respect?
Yeah.
The basic level of respect you give your Starbucks barista, you won't give me as just a person. Like,
right.
Yeah, it really makes you feel, when the entire world is telling you that you're nothing, that you're worthless, that you, you know, your only use in this world is to serve a man or to serve a white family or to, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's really disheartening, and it really is, mentally it's limiting, because you feel like no matter what I do, I can be the best, I can get the best grades, I can have the best job, I can have the best work ethic, I can have the best attitude, but at the end of the day, my gender and the color of my skin can never change, and it will always hold me back.
Breathe, girl. Breathe, honey. Because, see, this is why we having this conversation. Because this happened in 2014 in Mizzou, in Colombia. And the very next year, I pulled her out. So she didn't go back in 2015 because the level of racism, guys, was taking a toll.
Yeah.
And we feel like, what can we do as parents to try to protect, you know? And of course, I could have made phone calls to the powers that be, but I have to do what's in my power. Mm-hmm. And there were other factors going on to where you were not happy there.
Right.
The racism just was the icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. Like, we're about to cut this and eat this. We're done.
Right.
And then the very next year, 2015-2016 school year, Mizzou broke into protests.
Yep, they had all types of Black Lives Matter protests.
Baby, like, it was
crazy. Volatile. They had a lot of, like, you know, racial, what's the word I'm looking for? Racial, like, not like racial tolerance, but like,
yeah, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
Racial acceptance or diversity programs.
Exactly.
Where they teach you how to be accepting. Or, to me, they teach you how to tolerate. That's how I feel about it.
And then they increased the number of Black students that they were accepting. They increased the number of Black students who got scholarships.
Absolutely.
Just 'cause they wanted people to go there. I remember when Michael graduated. Like, they wanted him to go there. They was willing to give him money.
A free ride.
Yep.
4 years, free ride. Come on, because you a Black boy.
Yep.
And Michael said, no, thank you. No ham, no Pam, no turkey. No, we not doing it. And I had to respect his decision because he was like, and you know, Mike is real sensitive. So he was like, the vibe of this campus is horrible.
Yeah.
And we were able to talk to a few of the Black students that were at Mizzou the time we were visiting. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them had a free ride. Mm. Every single one of them, of course, says, yeah, the racism is still happening.
Yeah,
discrimination is still happening.
Absolutely.
But they're enduring it for their education.
Yep.
But what I really want to outline in this moment, guys, is this happened in 2014-2015 school year. The trauma of that is still in your body. Mm-hmm. And this is what we as Black women need to work through and work out. And even in Invisible Portraits, Dr. Patricia Collins and Dr. DeGruy actually pointed out that we carry that trauma of our ancestors with us.
Absolutely.
Because in the moment of you feeling like you were less than, that feeling felt familiar.
It did.
And I can understand that because just like you, my mother made sure I had a diverse background. Now, it got hood in my high school years. It wasn't as diverse. But elementary, middle school was diverse. We were, you know, high from the teachers.
I think high school is just ghetto.
High school becomes the most segregated of it all.
Absolutely.
The blacks, the whites, the Asians, like, it is the most segregated of
them
all.
Now, lucky for me, I will say that my high school, there weren't enough kids in my high school or
to
in
be
my
diverse,
class
let alone to be, yeah.
Literally, like, there was literally absolutely 12 people in my graduating class.
Yeah.
And there was everybody in my graduating class.
Absolutely.
There was everybody in my class, but we couldn't separate. Yeah. Like, we all got to stick together. We all we got.
And so one of the things I wanted to point out is that we need to understand that that trauma of our ancestors and what they've been through and what they did, that is still carried in our system as Black women.
Yeah.
You know, because I can remember, again, when it came to high school, my world was Black. My world was Black. Growing up, though, it was just as diverse as yours. But once I got to high school, it was definitely Black. It wasn't until I got out of high school into college and I went to Lynchburg, Kansas. This is a predominantly white city. Mm-hmm. And I was working, it was only a Pizza Hut in that city. Mm-hmm. McDonald's, you had to go to the next city.
Damn.
Which was a good 10, 15, 20, 25, maybe 30 miles away. I mean, it was gone. It was a long way away.
It was Kansas.
It was Kansas, for Christ's sake. But I remember getting a job at the local Pizza Hut. And a family walked in with a little girl, had to be no more than 6, maybe 7. And the little girl says, and I hear her, right? Because I'm the only Black person. Working this Pizza Hut, okay? And she says, and I can hear her as clear as day, "Mommy, is that a nigger?"
Oh. I would have quit right then.
I did not. And so her mother, you know, kind of corrected her because my back was turned to them. Mm-hmm. And so, but I saw them walk in. And so her mother was like, "Don't say that. You have to say Black person." What? How about shut up?
Right. Like,
how about she learned this from you? Where did she learn the word?
She learned it from somewhere.
How about where did you learn that word from? But because you say it at home.
You
she
have
thought
to teach
it was okay.
Her what's appropriate at home and what's appropriate in public.
And so I turn around praying that they're not in my tables.
Of course they are.
And they're at my table.
Of course they are.
So I get over there to place their order. And the little girl says, "I hate Black." 6'7". Her mother ignores it. Mm-hmm. Right? And this child is 6 or 7. So at this point, I am not mad at this child at all.
No.
This is a baby. She don't know. No. She only knows what she's being taught.
And she's being taught to hate Black people.
And what she's hearing.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't literally get in the house and teach their white children by giving them nigga lessons. Right? Maybe back in the day, maybe slavery, maybe, you know. And maybe now. I don't know. But I do know that children learn about behavior through what's interactive in their home. Mm-hmm. So I'm not mad at her. I'm mad at her mom and this other man. Like, they just totally ignored it.
Yeah.
They just totally told. But here's the thing. They could not look me in my face, place an order.
Of course not.
They did not look me in my face at all. Right? Left a huge tip. You got to understand.
So if you feel the need to do all that, if you can't look me in my face and you feel the need to try to pay me off.
Absolutely.
To try to make me feel better about what your shitty kid learned from your shitty self.
Yeah.
Then you have the problem. Maybe your conscience should fucking kick in and realize, hey, maybe there's something wrong with this. Because if you're poor and destitute on the street one day, you ain't going to be able to pay somebody off for calling him a nigger. And you might get killed.
Maybe. But my thinking at the time, because I was young, you know, I'm 18, you know what I'm saying? So my thinking at the time was to let it go, mm-hmm. right? But then Invisible Portraits just really made me think. But then I thought about the time that you were like two. Mm-hmm. And we live in the St. Louis area. We were on Lindbergh somewhere. Like, we were deep in Lindbergh. And I don't know why I was so far out. But I'm in white territory mm-hmm. at this point. And majority of people are white. And so, whatever. And you were hungry. And we stopped at McDonald's. And you wanted a balloon. Mm-hmm. And the balloon. And so, I asked the girl, can I get a balloon for my daughter? We're out. This is the only one. She said, we're out. That's what she said. And so I said, can I have the balloon off the cash register? You know, just cut that off and give it to her. You a baby? You don't know no better. I don't have anything to cut it off with.
Lies.
Let me tell you what happened. So I placed my order. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that's fine. A little girl walks up, little white girl walks up, asks for a balloon. This same individual goes to the back. I say, and I'm thinking to myself, if she gets scissors to cut this balloon, I'm popping it.
Not you popping it.
But it was already, I got my keys ready.
To pop it.
She came back with scissors. Mm. And boop, pop, I mean, everybody looking. I said, oh, it's attached to, I say, it's dead now. Nobody can get it. I said, that's the same balloon I asked you for my daughter. But now you're going to cut it off for her? I'm going to need a refund. We're done.
Yeah.
And so I felt the rage if even that little 6 or 7 year old girl saying, mama, is that a nigger? And I hate black. Like, I was taken back to that moment.
Yeah.
Mind you now, that was when I was 18 with the little girl at Pizza Hut. The incident was with you was literally years later.
Yeah.
I didn't have you until I was 20.
Yeah.
By the time you're 2, 3, what, I'm 22 at this time?
Yeah, 22, 23.
I felt I had to really pull myself together. I asked for a refund and everything.
Yeah.
I became that angry black woman mm-hmm. in that restaurant.
And now it looks like we're the ones who are lashing out. And it looks like we're the ones who are overreacting. Oh my God, it was just a balloon.
Exactly. Blah,
blah. But
exactly.
It's not just a balloon.
It's not just a balloon.
It's the fact that my black daughter couldn't have the balloon and your white daughter could have the balloon.
Absolutely. So I got my money back. The manager came up because, you know, at that age, I was real hot. So, and you was looking at me like, what's going on? Like, I don't understand. You were so just... And you were like, are we gonna get any McDonald's? No, we're not getting no McDonald's from here. No, absolutely not. We're not. Let's go. You know, so one of the things I really loved about Invisible Portraits was when they talked about that trauma that we continue to carry mm-hmm. from incident after incident after incident, and how we can still feel that trauma if we don't heal from it. You know, so that was just right there. It made me think about my own experiences. And then it made me think about the history of the black woman, because they talked about that mm-hmm. and how we were brought over. Our ancestors were brought over.
We were imported.
Right.
Like a commodity.
Exactly. They talked about us being a commodity and only used for labor. Mm-hmm. Or sexual purposes.
Yeah. The part that really got me was when they were talking about how in the 1800s...
that's Dr. DeGruy.
She was talking about how in the 1800s they would experiment on black women. Yes. And slave masters would take black women to the doctor and say, fix her. She's not fit for duty.
Right.
Because she had a baby. She's got some things going on. She's got some tearing, some leakage.
Right.
She can work in the fields.
She can work in the kitchen.
She can clean. She can cook. But she can't be used for sex. So she's not valuable.
And not fit for duty.
Yeah.
But let's take it back even further. As she mentioned, that us being on our ancestors and us black women and black men, bodies being literally stolen, brought over on these ships, how at the age of 10, 11, that these young black girls were being raped.
Yeah.
Were having babies.
Yeah. And having their babies taken away from them.
Absolutely. Having their babies taken away from them. Even to the point she talked about, you know, when white folk would visit white folk in the middle of, or you know, and they spend the night. And so, yeah, they would grab the 11-year-old, the 12-year-old. Mm-hmm.
And Uncle Jim likes him young.
Because Uncle Jim, Uncle Jim back there likes him young, and he has his way with her. That brought me back to why the white man is so into pedophilia.
Yeah.
There's a history that goes back to the 1800s. And she said this was in the 1800s.
Yeah.
In the 1800s, over 600,000 mixed babies were born, according to this. What? That's over half a million babies.
Yep.
Because they were literally taking these young girls and having sex with them. And they were getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. And it's just it was so riveting, guys. I need y'all to just watch it for one, okay?
You have to watch it.
But for Women's History Month, we're having this conversation because what I got most of all from Invisible Portraits and what's making me really critically think about what's happening in society is the black woman, we all know, has birthed this nation, has birthed this world.
Yeah.
And for us to be the least protected and the least valued in this country is just, I wouldn't even say in the world, it's just mind-boggling to me. But what stood out for me the most was when they began to talk about how resilient we are. Mm-hmm. And I really love that word resilient because we are.
Absolutely.
We have stood the test of time. And I think even now, this day and this age that we're in, definitely the, you know, information highway age, where information can come to you immediately, where you can get things at the tip of your fingers. We are beginning to see more and more of the black woman rising.
Yeah.
If Kamala Harris has not told you the black woman has risen, I'm going to need you to pay attention.
This is your official announcement.
This is your official announcement. The black woman will not be silenced.
No.
The black woman will not in any way, shape, or form go away.
No.
You will not say anything, do anything, treat anything, think we just anything less than who we are saying that we are. Mm-hmm. And that is greatness. Period. In a dress.
Period.
Period. The white woman will never match.
Never.
The black woman. And don't get me wrong. I ain't got no problem with white women. I think white women are great.
Right.
But what we have endured ancestrally, mm-hmm. when it comes to our line, the blood that pumps through our veins, the mere fact that you're in America says, number one, you came from a slave. Period. You're not from Mississippi.
Right.
Because that's what one girl told me. I mean, I don't understand. I'm from Mississippi, baby. That's where they brought them in at.
What the heart of slavery.
Okay, the heart.
Okay.
What do you think? How you think you got there?
Do you not know about the Civil War? Like, you just didn't.
You didn't put two and two together.
Right. That the South.
So I'm like, no, sweetie. Also, I'm gonna need you to do all, I mean, I just need you guys to know that because you are in America, you have some of that trauma of what your ancestors dealt with that moves through your veins and can repeat itself in generational curses and can repeat itself on the mentality that you're not good enough, that you're not worthy, that you're less than. That can perpetuate a self-image, especially when they're killing our black men on TV for sport because they feel like it. When we have white women calling the cops on children because they're selling water. Yeah. There's trauma.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that coin, you have the white woman who knows a part of her entitlement or her privilege is attached to her skin color.
Yeah. She knows that she's protected. She knows that if she starts yelling and screaming, that somebody gonna come running.
And that she will be favored in the situation.
Mm-hmm. Even if she's
it's
wrong.
Not. And let me tell you something. At this point, you got to have people on camera.
You do.
You got.
And just, even, but even though you have people on camera, they still don't care.
They don't. But listen up. Having a white woman on camera is more detrimental these days. It's more detrimental. Think about the woman in the park in New York who called the cops
because they was barbecuing
on the black man who was bird watching. Now, I don't know nothing about no black man bird watching, but anywho, I felt that a little odd, but you know what? Do what you do, sir.
If that's his hobby, leave him.
I'm going to leave him alone. I just thought it was a little odd. Like, what did you spot, sir? I don't know. And how he recorded her for his safety and for her safety. And of course, she was strangling up her dog and she was acting like he was attacking her.
Yeah.
And he was literally just standing there.
I saw this one video.
That was her detriment.
There was this one video. I saw this girl. And it was so sad. I saw this girl. And she was arguing with this black guy. And she was arguing with him because she was treating her dog badly. Like, she was, like, hitting her dog and kicking him and pulling him and shit. And he was like, hey, you need to calm the fuck down. Why are you abusing your dog like that? And she just immediately, like, goes into a rage. She's yelling. She's screaming. She's calling him all types of names. And then she throws her dog at him.
Did he catch it?
He did.
Did he walk away with it?
He did. He had her in. And then she came up to his car and started banging on her on his window, talking about, give me my dog back. No.
No. You were abusing the dog.
Exactly. No. Like, I just don't. And then there was this other one. Let me tell you. The Karen videos on the internet
are wild.
They're wild.
There's websites.
Sometimes there's... I get so deep in it and I'm just like, at a certain point, like, I can't believe that this shit is, like, is real. Like, people actually do this. This one lady, she was caught on camera petting the pit bull of her across the street neighbors, right? And she pet him. She talked to the husband. You know, there wasn't no problem. Walked away, right? She comes back talking about how their dog shouldn't be outside because her dog is small and their dog tried to attack her dog. They're like, when did this happen? They literally put everything up. They put her petting the dog. She's like, your dog almost bit me. You guys are acting like black people. I grew up around black people and they were all really nice. But you guys just, you don't know how to act.
How
you
black
know?
People coming? They were black?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They acting like black people. What does that mean?
Exactly. And that's what they asked her. They said, what does that mean?
Oh, my Lord. Well, here's what I want to tell you. You have to stop watching some of this crazy stuff.
I know.
Because one of the things that I have made a commitment to myself is that I am going to stop watching them brutally kill black men on video. Mm-hmm. If there's a video out, I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
Because that's part of one, control. Mm-hmm. It does something to your mind. Mm-hmm. Again, when we think about our ancestors and what they've been through, that trauma, that pain, that's part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so in our minds and in our hearts, and what's so sad about it, it becomes familiar. Mm-hmm. Especially for me as a Black mother, I worry about my kids going. Like, okay, it's one thing to be concerned with them being out and making sure they're safe and they don't get in a car accident and all that. See, that's what the white woman worry about. Make sure your seatbelt's on, make sure this, make sure that, make sure that. But we as Black mothers are coupled with the concern of, not only do I have to contend with that, but I have to contend with the encounter of the police.
Mm-hmm. Or the encounter of the wrong group of white people.
The wrong group of white people. So I just know for me, I really got a deep sense and understanding about where that trauma comes from. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us thinking that we're not good enough.
Yeah.
That just don't come from the household and your upbringing.
No.
So now we have to contend with what's coming from our ancestors.
Yeah. It's and what they've been through. In who we are. That we're not good enough. That absolutely. We're less than. That we're, you know, absolutely. Separate but equal. Like
no, we're not
but doing no. That. And I really feel like what those videos really do, and I stopped watching those videos a while ago, those videos I told you about were from months ago, but I really try not to watch those Karen videos and things like that, because I feel like it just makes a bigger divide.
It does.
For us against them. Because, and I don't want it to be us against them. I just want the rights that you promised me in the 14th Amendment. I want to be able to call the police and say, hey, I'm being harassed by anybody, and the police care.
Yeah,
absolutely. They give a fuck at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not only that, it makes us feel, like you say, less than. But I think what watching those videos do is, it is a form of control over us. Mm-hmm. To be scared, to live in fear.
Yeah. Oh, I hope I don't. See
not to mention, today. Here's the thing: not to mention your own set of fears that you have about yourself individually. Mm-hmm. But that what's compounded for the Black woman is the whole other set of Black woman fears that we already have, coming down from the ancestors. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I get it. I really do. I myself, Invisible Portraits, thank you, Oprah Winfrey, honey, girl. Thank you. Because you really, I mean, that film really got me to thinking about that lasting trauma.
Yeah.
Because we were portrayed in the media, and I could remember this, being portrayed in the media as welfare queens. That was my era. That's Generation X, or the baby boomers were before me. They were considered welfare queens. I remember growing up hearing that. Mm-hmm. That all Black people want to do is get on welfare. And because my mom was on welfare, I felt like she was less than.
Yeah.
Because that's the portrayal.
That's what they want you to think.
That's what they want you to believe.
Yeah.
But that was never the case. Because listen, I've been on welfare. Mm-hmm. Now, thank God I've been able to get on, you know, I've been on and off, you know, a couple of times. But I've never remained there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't think they understand that, for one, it's more white people on welfare than it is Black people.
Absolutely. It's more white people taking advantage of welfare than it is Black people.
Because ultimately it was built for them anyway.
Exactly.
So why not take advantage of it? But they're not seen as, right, as bad or welfare queens when they really are the welfare queens.
Right.
If there's more whites than Blacks. But in Invisible Portraits, it also talked about the mammy. Like, that was the very first image of Black woman on TV.
Yeah.
The mammy, the maid, someone who took care of the white family and was happy to do it and chucked and jived and sang her gospel hymns and joked a little bit with Massa.
Right.
Leading to the Jezebel. Mm-hmm. Which goes to your point on how we were sexualized constantly.
Yeah.
Even to this day, we're sexualized constantly. And not sexualized just by the Black man, but by the white man.
By the white man, sexualized by, and sexualized not just as black women, sexualized as black girls.
Yes, because not only, because you have the black men who sexualize us, mm-hmm. right? Then you have the white men who definitely fetish us. Mm-hmm. And then you have the white women who want to be us.
Yeah.
So I believe it was Dr. Grew again that says we then become the oppressed of the oppressed.
Absolutely.
So under the oppressed, you have the black woman. So I just think it is absolutely amazing. This, let me tell you something, guys. I really, 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 I want to encourage you guys to really think about your black racial experiences that you've had in this country, your personal ones, how that shows up into your life today. It made me want to dig deeper into history. I know a lot about history simply because of, you know, my spirituality and what I stand for spiritually. I've had to do a lot of research, and God had to really make sure that it's making sense and it's ringing true for me. That's a whole nother podcast, okay? And we can probably talk about it, but what you need to understand is that the trauma of your ancestors makes your trauma with discrimination, prejudice, racial injustice, it makes it become familiar with us. And it's adding to the existing trauma of your present or your past. And it makes it that much harder sometimes to overcome. But here's where the black woman comes in and is resilient in that we are not going to let anyone stop us from doing anything we want to achieve.
Period.
There are so many of black women dominating in any given area. As a matter of fact, the number one gender and race that is entrepreneurial is the black woman.
Yeah. Because
there are more entrepreneur black women than there are black men.
I think that's because of how marginalized we are.
Yes. We're underestimated.
And how oppressed we are. People aren't going to give us a shot.
No.
So we got to make our own shot.
We got to shoot our own shot.
We got to do it ourselves.
So goes back to resilience.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to, you can shut this door, I'm just going to build one.
Right.
How about that? So think about that trauma, though, and know that you can overcome it. Let me tell you something. I don't think you guys understand the significance of Kamala Harris sitting as VP right now. After watching Invisible Portraits, you will.
Yeah.
Like, that got me all the way there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm at Kamala. I'm VP now. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Now you need to watch Amend on
Netflix. I'm watching Amend. Don't worry about it. I got it.
And you learn the history of the 14th Amendment. And that, but that power that you feel is going to just make it even more so. To know how we rose up, to know how we stood for our rights, and we keep it going.
Absolutely. Period. Absolutely. I mean, and it's just a matter of understanding that history and who you're standing on the backs of.
Yeah.
I know for a fact my last name, Moore, is from a Moore plantation in Mississippi and Arkansas. But they can't pinpoint which, well, according to my cousin who actually did it, and he's deceased now, according to my cousin who actually did the genealogy of our family, our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, was initially in Arkansas on a Moore plantation. But the Moore plantation, but the Moore family was extremely rich and owned multiple plantations in
Arkansas.
The South.
Ah, okay.
Period. So we know that he went from Arkansas to Mississippi. But I'm not sure if he went to Mississippi, or he was in Mississippi first, or he was in Arkansas first.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, we know we come out of that area. I want to say he came out of Mississippi. I want to say he came out of Arkansas because my grandmother came out of Mississippi.
So that would make sense.
Or he came out of Mississippi too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is on, this is my mother's father, mm-hmm. who I never met. He passed away when I was a little girl. I had to be about nine. I had to be 5 or 6 mm-hmm. when he passed away. And his name was William Moore. I never got a chance to meet him though. But that's where he traced
it all back
our lineage. So I know for a fact my last name is from a plantation.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Crazy.
That's a powerful thought in itself. So I just be like, you know what? But I really want you guys to just, you know, really understand your power as a Black woman, especially if you're a Black woman listening to this. Let me tell you something, guys. Watch Invisible Portraits. It will actually inspire you to just be a better you. Definitely will educate you on some things. Mm-hmm. There were some things in there I did know already. I just like the way that she was able to put it all in perspective.
Yeah. It's how it all relates.
Right, because some of this stuff together. Some of this stuff we have bits and pieces in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
But we never, you know, really sit down and put it all together. And I think for Women's Month, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to sit down and just, let me tell you about the power of a woman. Okay? On top of that, a Black woman.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This was a great conversation.
It was. We're almost at an hour.
Ah, cool.
This is the longest episode ever.
Alrighty, well, we're not going to hold you guys any longer. Again, go to On Demand, download the app, On app, watch Invisible Portraits. No, this is not a paid advertisement, but I thought it was important.
But you know, Oprah, we are here for you.
We are here for you, boo. Come on now, a daughter's dilemma. We checked. Ain't nobody doing this but us.
Right.
Okay, but anywho, one of the things I want you guys to really take from this whole conversation is that you have a struggle as a Black woman. You also have a truth as a Black woman, but you can be free of it all as a Black woman.
Yeah.
Knowing your history and whose shoulders you stand on and who will stand on your shoulders, mm-hmm. should just give you the mindset of wanting to move your life forward into a different, in a different way, yeah. Period. Period. I hope this podcast blessed you in some way. And we didn't even get to talk about the whole episode, but that's okay.
We didn't.
Follow us on Instagram at A Daughter's Dilemma. You can email us your stories. Email us how you like it. Subscribe to the podcast. Comment, guys. We want to hear from you.
And review.
Yes, please review it. Right now, we are number 4 in Paraguay. Look, I'm thanking God for the little things, okay? So that means in Paraguay, they are giving us a listen. We are number 4, okay, in the mental health category. So I think we are making a difference, even if it was on the other side of the world,
exactly.
Okay?
We're
going to
make it here one day.
And you know, and if we don't, I ain't worried about it either.
Period.
Because this was meant so that my daughter and I could have consistent conversations and stay connected and help somebody else. So it's all good. So again, you can email us at adaughtersdilemma@gmail.com. Email us your stories, your questions. Email us just to say, hey, thank you for doing the podcast. You can even encourage us to keep going. We're going to do it anyway. But you know what? A kind word goes a long way.
It does.
Okay? So until next time, I am Nephra the mother.
And I am Rodnique the daughter. And remember that every woman is someone's daughter.
And every daughter can be an excellent mother. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.